Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Dog Works Radio, brought to you by Twine Group Media and fueled by Native Performance Dog Food. On the line, I have my co-host in Denver. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing quite well. I just pulled into the driveway after a very hectic traffic drive in Denver.
Well, you know, the beauty of Blog Talk Radio and streaming on the internet is we can do this just about anywhere. Like I said, I'm calling in from Alaska, and you are in the car on the cell phone, the beauty of the iPhone, and you are soon to be back on the landline here in just a second. But we also have a guest today, and we're going to introduce her in just a second. Her name is Noelle, and she is a service dog client of ours and also wants to promote the awareness of psychiatric service dogs. So that is the topic of our show. We've titled it A Service Dog Tale. Michelle, what is going on at Denver Dog Works?
Well, today was quite busy. We're actually getting back into doing some day training for some of our clients. It's something that we usually do around springtime. For whatever reason, all those Christmas puppies that people get, they just start realizing, hey, I can't be home as much, and my dog is bored, and they start to become destructive little creatures. So we do offer day training at Denver Dog Works. It costs $25 per dog, and your dog gets socialization, a couple of walks, and a continuation of their training.
That is always a very popular program at Denver Dog Works, and I'm glad that people are taking advantage of it with those Christmas puppies. We had a very popular show back Christmas week about that, about how people make that impulsive decision about buying a puppy for Christmas, and here we are getting ready to go into the spring break periods of a lot of people's families, and they just don't know what to do with that rambunctious little dog that they got for Christmas.
That is absolutely correct. The other things that are going on at Denver Dog Works is we are moving our Canine Good Citizen group class to Wednesday nights. Another thing that we do in the spring to open up Saturday a little bit, because Saturdays get pretty hectic. It also gives some of my clients that would like to take that class that can't because they work on Saturday the opportunity to do it in the springtime. So Canine Good Citizen is now moving to 5:30 on Wednesday nights beginning on March 2nd.
And you can find out more about that by visiting our Facebook page at facebook.com/Denver Dog Works or any other social media. You just type in Denver Dog Works in the search engine and we will pop up. And, of course, our main site is denverdogworks.com. And just a little bit of an update about what's going on up here in Alaska. Just finishing up pretty much our season here in Alaska, and my training for the first year of qualifying for the Iditarod. My kennel partner is out on the Serum Run. She is in Manly Hot Springs, which is their third stop on the Serum Run, and everything is going well with all the teams. And you can find out more about the Serum Run by going to Facebook and just typing in Serum Run in the search bar, and I'm happy to be a part of that with my kennel partner on the trail right now.
That is fantastic. Good luck to Erin. I'm really cheering her on. I hope that her and the dogs are doing well. And did you just sneeze?
Nope.
Okay. I thought I heard you sneeze.
No, I'm all good. No allergies today. So Michelle, if you will, introduce our guest and kind of preface the show, what it's all about today.
Well, the show is about psychiatric service dogs. And, you know, we've done lots of shows on service animals. We've even had the representative from the Americans with Disabilities Act on our show discussing various topics dealing with service dogs, including the pit bull ban here in Denver. And, you know, I I have a few clients that still come to class religiously, and I appreciate that very much because it just means that they're enhancing their handling skills and keeping their dogs crisp and vibrant when they are in public. And Noelle is one of those clients, and she runs into a few things that are red flags for all of my psychiatric service dog clients, and that is that they are in a position that they're almost being discriminated against because they don't appear to be disabled. And she and I were speaking about this, and we decided that, you know what, it'd be a good idea to just put it out there on the show because I've written blogs about it. I've done public speaking about this, and it just comes around to the fact that either we're not reaching enough people or there aren't enough resources out there on the internet for people to go out there and find out why is this person that does not appear to be disabled needing a service dog? Why is that allowed for them and not me?
Right, right. Okay, so introduce our guest, please.
Noelle, would you like to say anything about who you are and why you called up me to help you out?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me, first of all. So my name is Noelle, and I have a service dog named Arthur. And the deal is I was widowed a year and a half ago, and because of the circumstances surrounding my widowhood, I have been diagnosed with PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder, and I just through the process of grieving and all of the stuff with that, I was just struggling with kind of sorting everything out. And last summer, I was my sister was visiting from London, and she and I were kind of talking through kind of where I was at, and I was telling her that I was having a hard time wanting to go anywhere, that I couldn't bring my dog with me, that he really intuitively knows when I'm getting ready to have, when I'm not doing well. My heart really races with high anxiety. That's basically the biggest side effect of the PTSD or whatever. And so so he really intuitively knows that for me, and he really helps me when I am in that position. And so I was explaining that to my sister, and I was telling her, so it's hard for me to even, you know, want to motivate to go to the grocery store or to do anything. And so I was telling her, I wish I could, you know, just somehow figure out a way to confiscate one of those green vests, is what I said, and so that I could take him to Target with me. And about that same time, she read the article in the newspaper that mentioned Denver Dog Works, and so I called up Michelle, and we did an evaluation, and she thought that Arthur would be a good candidate, and so we started training, and it has helped me immensely, and it's been incredible. I really feel like starting to work with Arthur was a huge thing in the process for me for when I started really to kind of come around and start doing better in my process. So I'm just really, really thankful.
Right. And you know, I'm glad you mentioned the evaluation because I typically don't train dogs that are already owned by people. And the reason why is because a lot of times that dog can't do what the person is asking of it, or that dog can't pass the public access training portion of becoming a service dog, because there's a large ratio of failure for a service dog. And with Arthur, the reason why he went ahead and was allowed to come into the program was because he was doing your specific commands for you that we needed him to do under the guise of the psychiatric commands that he is supposed to do. I had to teach him how to be a better little gentleman in public. As you know, we did struggle with that for a little while, but you know what? He did pass this last week, and I'd like to let everybody know that Arthur is a full-fledged service dog, and he is doing his job quite wonderfully. Would you like to tell us a little bit about Arthur? What kind of dog is he? How old is he? How does he assist you when you have those moments where, you know, you're anxious or you have distractibility, you know, the anxiety in public and those types of things?
Yes. So a little bit about Arthur. He is 2.5. And he is a Westie, so that they look like a white Scotty dog. And so he's very, very cute, which gets him lots of attention when we're in public, which isn't necessarily a good thing. But what he so what he does for me is basically when I start to have the high anxiety, he knows that that's going on. And so he will come to me and I call it giving hugs. He gives me hugs and he will lay his head down on my shoulder. And it helps me to be able to just kind of breathe with him, even if I don't completely match my breathing to his, because dogs breathe faster. It just helps me to be able to kind of sync my breathing, and that's a huge thing for me, is kind of getting my breath under control. And so having him there, I'm able to do that just to be able to hold him and breathe with him.
Right. So what you're describing is like a panic attack, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where you can't catch your breath, you feel the walls closing in on you, all of those types of situations. Now, you and I decided to bring this subject to Blog Talk Radio, Dog Works Radio Show, to help educate people a little bit because, you know, you're just as short as I am. You're like 5'2", I'm 5'1", and you appear to be just as regular little girl, just like I am. And when you and I go out in public and we practice with Arthur, people stare at us and they wonder, oh, they're trainers. They're training that dog for someone. That's really cool. But you've had a couple of bad experiences where people weren't as friendly and nice because they heard an answer from you that they weren't too sure how to respond to. And that is because, as everyone out there listening can understand, having a psychiatric disability is not visible. You know, Noelle's not missing a limb. She has not suffered a traumatic brain injury that has placed her in a wheelchair. She is not blind. She is not deaf. She does not have any outward signs that she has a disability, and yet she gets to take her Westie with her wherever she goes. And there's a lot of people that try to buck the system and want to take their dogs wherever they want to go because they're their children. And as much as I understand the thought process behind having and taking your dog with you everywhere because it's your child, there is a reason why public does not allow that. The ADA definition of a service animal goes into effect on March 15, 2011. And it states this: service animal means any dog that is individually trained to do work or perform tasks for the benefit of an individual with a disability, including a physical, sensory, psychiatric, intellectual, or other mental disability. Other species of animals, whether wild or domestic, trained or untrained, are not service animals for the purpose of this definition. The work or task performed by a service animal must be directly related to the handler's disability. Examples of work or tasks include, but are not limited to, assisting individuals who are blind or have low vision with navigation and other tasks, alerting individuals who are deaf or hard of hearing to the presence of people or sounds, providing nonviolent protection or rescue work, pulling a wheelchair, assisting an individual during a seizure, alerting individuals to the presence of allergens, retrieving items such as medicine or the telephone, providing physical support and assistance with balance and stability to individuals with mobility disabilities, and helping persons with psychiatric and neurological disabilities by preventing or interrupting impulsive or destructive behaviors. The crime deterrent effects of an animal's presence and the provision of emotional support, well-being, comfort, or companionship do not constitute work tasks for the purpose of this definition. So, Noelle, you fall under psychiatric and neurological disabilities, meaning that Arthur helps you break a thought process in order for you to function in public situations, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with all of that definition there, the definition up until March 15th, 2011, which is just in a couple of weeks, this definition changes. Before that, it was stated that any animal that was trained could be listed as a service animal. In other words, we had monkeys and miniature horses and potbelly pigs and cats and things like that. And the ADA decided that those animals were not proving themselves service worthy. They weren't doing their tasks, and they definitely were not following the guidelines for public access training. Noelle, what was one of the hardest things for Arthur to pass in public access?
The food distraction.
Distraction, correct. The food distraction.
He's very food motivated, yeah.
He is food motivated because you tree trained him when he was a baby. So for Arthur, it was very difficult passing the food section of the test. Now, on the public access test, a lot of people don't even know what that involves, but basically, in a restaurant setting, whether the dog is on a sit or a down command, he is not allowed to forage for food. If they do smell or eat a little crumb, that is not an automatic disqualification, although it's not appropriate. It allows for other patrons to automatically complain that your dog has done something inappropriate, and therefore they can ask management to have you leave. That is why, with my training, I make it so intense on the food drop, especially when we do the Canine Good Citizen training. I am dropping food all the time to try to get the dogs to understand that that's not for them, even if it is a doggy treat. So, Arthur did quite well, though, in the target when we were dropping treats all over the floor. What else would you like to talk about, Noelle, about your experiences when you do take Arthur out?
Well, the reason that I wanted to do this, and the reason that I have wanted to sort of communicate with the public is that, you know, I'm realizing that people just don't, they simply don't know that it is possible that a normal-looking person have a service dog. And the bottom line is, I didn't know before I had him that normal-looking people could have him. That the only service dogs that I had ever seen before were for, you know, a blind person, or were for someone in a wheelchair that, like, they helped to push the button for the door and that sort of thing. And so it seems like I can be gracious to people when they are curious, because I would have been curious too. But I think that the deal is that they don't understand that they need to be courteous about my space. that really they don't want to know my story. It's so hard to answer their questions. You know, what I commonly get asked is, people assume, first of all, that I'm training him, and then when they find out that he's my service dog, they're like, well, what does he do? And it's like, well, it's none of your business. It's, you know, you don't want to know, you know, like, you don't want to know what happened to me that I need this service dog. And what you're asking me puts me back in that place where I can have the the high anxiety or a panic attack. And so you know, that can be a trigger. And so it almost can make it worse. And so it's just, I just want to sort of raise awareness that that we're using dogs for more things than just for blind people or for people in wheelchairs. I can't remember exactly what you asked me, but I can't remember exactly where I was going with that.
No, you answered the question, and that's fine.
Okay, good.
Let me help you a little bit. So when you first started out with me and you came to me and you said, Michelle, I really don't know what to answer when people ask me, why do you have that dog? And then they not only do they ask you, why do you have that dog? They're not asking you if they can pet him. They aren't following any of the general guidelines out there when a dog has a vest on. You know, and I tried to make it easier on you by saying, you know what, just tell them that you're training for me. And you said that you tried that a couple of times and that people completely behaved in a different manner, that you were training this dog and that they were curious and inquisitive, but their line of questioning changed completely. It didn't feel like they were out and out berating you with, well, what do you need it for? And, well, I don't see anything wrong with you, you know, and yeah, people can be pretty nasty. And let me go into a little bit with the autistic service dogs that I train. Autistic individuals are running into the same sorts of discrimination that you are running into as a psychiatric service handler, okay? What's happening is, especially with the young adult autistic people that have service dogs, the dog is there to bridge for them and help them communicate to the public, but people are starting to become a little bit more rude about it. Well, you don't look like you need a service dog, and that's a problem. Robert.
Yes.
Would you like to help us answer some of these questions? Because you're the reason why I got into service dog training. Is not something that I ever thought that I would be doing, and I've really kind of taken it to a different level than even you were doing when you started our business some 20 years ago.
Well, if I could, I would like to ask Noelle a couple of questions. I know that you guys talked about what the definition of a service dog is and how Arthur helps you, but the thing that I always run into, Noelle, is when people ask questions, typically they're asking because they're curious. We are a very curious society, especially here in the United States, and a lot of times when we ask questions, it comes across as being rude, but most of the time we just want to know, you know, what's going on. You know, we're curious. We want to know why you have this dog, and it's not necessarily to, you know, to delve into your personal life, but we just want to know. So how do you cross that bridge when somebody comes across where they appear to be rude, but they're really just looking for information? I think that service dogs are a wonderful tool to use for public awareness and education, whether you're in Target or at the Starbucks or whatever. Now, of course, you don't want to answer questions all the time. You'll never get your shopping done. But how do you approach that when somebody does come at you rudely, but they're not thinking that they're being rude? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I had a woman that was talking to me, and she kept pressing in, and I was talking to her because we were standing next to each other. We were looking at shoes at Nordstrom Rack, and so she kept asking questions, and I kept kind of dodging them and trying to kind of help her and educate her, you know, like, no, this is a psychiatric service dog. No, he's for me. And then at some point she asked me a question and she pressed in too far. And I said, you know, okay, this is a psychiatric service dog and he's for me. So the questions that you're asking me are very personal. And at that point she was like, oh, okay, I am so sorry. And so she was very teachable about it. And so I felt like that was a really good way to handle it, just to let her be like, okay, you went too far, and that's a personal question. And so, but at the same time, like, I don't think that she, like, it, it had never occurred to her that, oh, these could be, this could be really personal, what I'm asking her, you know?
Right.
So.
And you know, Noel, in today's very fast paced society, and they have, TV shows just about everything and everybody's problem. And, you know, and we are fascinated by other people's dilemmas. You know, that's what the media is all about today is figuring out what's wrong with somebody else. And we watch it so we'll feel better about ourselves. And a lot of times when people are handicapped, you know, a lot of people either gravitate towards them in kind of a needing type of relationship, or they pull away so far that they don't want to be around it. And oftentimes, I remember when I was a little kid, and, you know, when we were growing up in the 70s and the 80s, my mom would always tell us, don't stare at the guy in the wheelchair, or don't stare at the guy that has crutches, or, you know, has braces and all these things on his leg. So we were brought up to kind of, you know, think that was a taboo subject. But now, where there are service dogs and the handicapped and the disabled are much more in the public light, it is a little bit more of a fascination than it is a taboo subject. Do you agree or disagree?
No, I agree. I think that's really true. Yeah.
So, if you will, tell us about the day in the life of Arthur. And the reason I ask this is because we have been approached so many times by service dog clients or people that are wanting to get dogs certified as service dogs, and they say one thing almost all the time: I want him as a service dog, but I don't want to take him to work. Or I want him as a service dog, but I like to go out to the club, and I don't want to take him to the club. And, you know, that sort of thing. So tell us, you know, the day in the life of Noel and Arthur.
Okay, well, today was like a slightly atypical day because I took him to get groomed this morning, so I had to leave him there, and I hate leaving him anywhere. I hate doing anything without him. So that was our morning. But then, you know, he does everything with me, and so we ran errands. I am a hairstylist, so we went to the beauty supply place, and we went to the grocery store, and we picked up dinner at Chipotle, and we went to my mom's house, so I took his vest off of him so that he could chase squirrels in the backyard and make the switch in his brain to realizing that he wasn't working. So, and then we came home. So he went to work with me for a little bit. I went and dropped off the stuff that I had picked up at the supply place, and he's a pretty good boy there. I don't take him all the time, but I take him sometimes, and he is doing better and better. I'm starting to bring him more and more because he does really well at work, actually.
And you said you were a hairstylist. Is that a pretty busy salon?
I'm busy in that, like, it's not a very big salon. There's not very many chairs, we call it. So there's only three of us that work there. So it's not like super busy with clients, but I stay busy and like really on task all day long. So.
So does he have a place to stay at work, or does he follow you from the chair to the shampoo room to the cashier, et cetera? Or does he just kind of have a spot where he stays?
I keep him next to me when I go back to shampoo, or when I'm back mixing color, he goes with me. But when I take him, but when I'm working at my chair, then I have a bed for him that he sits in. So.
And he's a very recent graduate, so he can still, and not only is he a recent graduate, but he's also a dog, so he can get himself into trouble. What happens if he gets himself into trouble at work?
That's a good question, because it hasn't really happened. What do you mean gets into trouble? Like,
well, you know, let's say he's laying down. Does he have a bed or something that he lays
he
on
does.
There?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he has a bed that's next to my station.
So let's say, for example, and it may never happen, but let's say he's sitting there at the chair and a little kid comes into the salon and starts running around the salon, you know, like little kids do. Screaming and hollering and knocking stuff off the shelves and all that kind of stuff. And Arthur ran over and started to investigate and play with the little kid. How would you handle that situation in a public setting?
Oh, that's a good question. because typically I have him when I'm in public settings. I have him on a leash, so I can really control. I can really control, you know, what he does, and so he, you know, I make him sit, and he usually will, you know, pretty much hop too. But yeah, if we were at work and that happened, I'm not really sure. There aren't. It's not really a kid friendly salon, but I mean, it could happen. So
sure.
Yeah.
I think Noelle would take a little heathen out of the store.
All right. So my next. Go ahead, Michelle.
I said I think Noelle would kick the little heathen out of the store.
meaning the kid.
That's what I would do. I would kick the kid out. No, I think
right,
I would.
Right.
I would. I don't think he would. I don't think
so. My next question, Noelle, is there's always a lot of talk, and Denver is a pretty progressive city in terms of service dogs. One of the more progressive cities in the nation that I'm familiar with. A lot of people know what service dogs are and where they're allowed and not allowed to be in Denver. But one of the things that always comes up almost on every show that we do about service dogs is when people say that you cannot come in for whatever reason. Let's say it's a mom and pop sit down restaurant, and you know, just owned by a family, and you bring your dog in and you're ready to have dinner, and they say, "Hold on, we don't want this dog in our establishment." How would you handle that situation? At the point in training and in the point in your life right now, how would you handle that situation with you and Arthur and whoever you are with as a guest?
Well, I think it would depend on where I was. I think if I were at a mom and pop restaurant and they were saying, you know, we don't allow service dogs here, I think it would piss me off, and I think I would be like, well, I don't want to give you my business anyway then. Like, even though I know that, like, they legally can't do that, I think it would make me mad, and I think I would go ahead and leave regardless. But I have had that happen to me once. I was at a corn maze, and the guy said, yeah, there's no pets here. And I was like, well, he's not a pet, he's a service dog. And the man said, well, what's he servicing? And I said, none of your business. And I just, when I stood up to him, he totally backed down. And so he didn't say anything else to me. And so I was like, well, okay, I'm going to go ahead and walk in then, since you're not saying anything more. So I just walked past him, and that was the end of it. And he didn't have to me at all, but.
Now, Robert,
Michelle, go ahead.
As you're aware, she is advised to say exactly that because the ADA states that they are not allowed to ask in a situation like the corn maze where it's an outdoor event. They can ask, what services does this dog provide for you in this establishment? So his line of questioning was incorrect, and her answer was correct. They can't ask, why do you need this service dog, or what's your disability? That's not allowed, and that's where a lot of businesses make a mistake. So at the mom and pop restaurant, let's just call it Mama Mia's Spaghetti, who cares, okay? The Mama Mia cannot say, we don't allow service dogs. She cannot discriminate against the dog being in there that is a certified service dog. What she can ask is, what service does your dog provide for you while you're eating dinner? And that is when Noelle needs to say, for psychiatric, we have them say, he breaks my thought processes, and that's it. That's all they have to say. When you bring on the P word, when you say he's a psychiatric service dog, those in the public that are ignorant to the fact of what exactly is psychiatric, number one, they're going to automatically think that you're crazy and they don't want you in their restaurant anymore because, oh, my God, we have a crazy person in here. Or number two, they have no idea in the world what that word even is. So it's easier to say he's medical alert or he breaks my thought processes. It's not really any of their business as to the exact services that the dog provides. as long as the dog is well-behaved, no one will complain. On that note, though, I'd like Robert to describe the case in New York where they had almost banned service dogs from going into restaurants at all.
Yeah, there was a series of cases in New York City where a bunch of mom-and-pop restaurants got together and they said, we don't want dogs in our establishments because we're tired of getting sued by the other patrons, meaning that a person that comes in with a service dog and the person that's sitting next to them feeds the dog and then it causes a problem, and the next thing you know, patron number three is suing the restaurant because somebody's feeding the dog, just for an example. So the restaurant owner said, we'll take the fines for not allowing the dogs, whatever the fine is in New York City. Let's say it's $1,000 or whatever. Instead of being sued by all of these patrons for much more money for the same reason. So it was almost a catch-22 for these restaurant owners. They wanted the dogs there, but they didn't want to be sued, so therefore they just went ahead and said, no dogs allowed, but go ahead and fine us, to the city of New York or whoever was the fining party. So my question to you, Noel, is how has Arthur affected your daily life for the better and for limitations? And the limitations that I'm thinking of is, let's say that you want to go to the club or you want to go to the Rockies game or to the Avs game in Denver, and you know, what are you going to do with your little guy if you want to go to these places and you know, you just don't want to take him? Would you not go, or how would you address that subject?
When it comes to stuff like that, there are times that I leave him at home, and it's rare that I leave him at home. You know, there are some things, like there have been like parties at friends' houses where the friends hate dogs or whatever, and so it's like, well, we're kind of a pair, we come together, so if you're not into that, then I'm just not going to come, and rather than go by myself. But I do occasionally leave him at home and do things without him, but I do so much better when I have him with me. So that's definitely how he's affected me for the better. And one of the things for some reason that I struggle with my anxiety is driving. And so I do so much better if I have him in the car with me. So even getting there can be hard. The limitations, I am a huge Rockies fan, and Arthur wasn't trained last summer when it was still baseball season. So I was still doing things like going to baseball games by myself. So I haven't decided yet how I'm going to handle that, if I'm going to just take him and try it or if I'm going to leave him at home. So I'm thinking I'm just going to try it. I'm thinking he's going to be a Rockies fan too.
So my next question, and we have about 6 minutes left, so we're running short on time. It's really flown by. My next question is, how do you identify Arthur? What type of? And I haven't seen you, so I've been up in Alaska since you guys started training. So I've only seen Arthur through pictures. So how do you identify him? What type of vest do you use? Do you have identification? Do you carry him when you go? Does he walk on a leash? How do you guys incorporate him being a service dog for public awareness?
He wears a vest, and it's blue. And they, it fits him, and then I have a leash, and I just got about 6 weeks ago, one that goes, it's a European style, so it goes kind of over my shoulder, so it's hands-free, sort of. I don't have to hold onto it with my hands, and that's been amazing. That's been really, really useful. I can, carry my purse and a cup of coffee and, still have him on the leash. So that's what we use, and then he wears the normal collar, so.
Okay.
What is something, Noel, what is something that you learned that is not allowed that we have been joking about? And Arthur's not too happy still about not getting to do this at Target.
Ah, yes. I used to put him in the grocery cart. Is that what you're asking?
That's right.
I treated him like a kid and for a long time. And I'm realizing, you know, like we're really learning that he's a dog and he's working. And so, yeah, I don't carry him. He's a big enough boy that he walks. So that's been good. And having this new leash has been really helpful so that I can push the cart with both hands. And so that's been really useful for that too. So
my last question, Noelle, is what about doggy time? How much of that does he have? Is he allowed to be a dog? You said earlier that you went over to your mom's house and you took the vest off and he was allowed to run around and chase the squirrels. A lot of people think that a service dog is working 24 hours a day. And I tell people, well, most of us don't work 24 hours a day and we have off time where we're sitting around watching Monday Night Football or whatever we're doing and we don't have our quote unquote work clothes on anymore. So how does Arthur get to be a dog?
Right. When we walk in the door at home, I take the vest off of him. So, and I think that he is really clear on, because he acts so differently when he has the vest on, that I think he's really clear about, okay, when the vest is off, I'm not working and I get to be just a regular dog. And so he has, you know, lots of toys that he plays with at home, and he's an only dog. So he's really good at self-play. We play fetch down the stairs at my house, and if I don't play with him, he'll take his ball up to the top and throw it down for himself. So he's very good at the self-play. So, and you know, he gets to run around, and my mom has a huge backyard. So, and she has a dog too. So he gets to play over there and chase squirrels. And so, yeah, he gets to, and we go to a dog park occasionally and, you know, meet other dog friends, his best friend Frank, and so he gets to play with other dogs and be a real dog sometimes too.
Gotcha. Michelle, one last question, please.
Noelle, are you satisfied with the training you've received and the program itself? Is it everything you expected it would be?
Oh my gosh, it's been amazing. I can't say enough good things about Denver Dog Works. Like I said earlier, this has been the first thing it was the first time in a long time that I had felt hope about something. And so the stuff that you've done with Arthur has just been amazing, and the way that you've helped me has just been amazing. And I am just so, so thankful for you. So.
Oh, well, that's not what I was looking for, but thank you very much. what I'm trying to get at is, do you feel like your life is back to as close to normal as it can be because he gets to go with you everywhere now?
I would say that, you know, it's normal, except that now I have a service dog, so that makes it a little weird too, you know? But I think...
Yes.
But, like, as far as how I feel when I'm going out there, I feel, I think, as good as I can at this phase in the game. So, you know, I'm – so yes and no.
Okay. Well, we'll
all right, guys. We're running out of time here. Noelle, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much for being on the show and educating the folks that are listening. It's been very helpful. It's always good to hear from people that are actively involved in it versus us just as trainers. So we really appreciate that. And keep up the good work. And remember, you can come in anytime for those lifelong drop-in group classes or whatever Michelle has scheduled for you. It's been a pleasure.
Hey.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank
Robert.
You for having me.
Yes.
If you get a lot of inquiries about this show, would you please pass that along to me? And I'll let Noelle know, maybe we'll have a part two, because I think that there's a lot more that we can all talk about.
Sounds good. Noelle, thank you very much. Michelle, we got to go. We got about 30 seconds. On behalf of Michelle and myself, this is DogWorks Radio, brought to you by Twine Group Media and Denver DogWorks. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, or just about anywhere else on the web. Just search for DogWorks Radio or Denver DogWorks. This is Robert Forto. Never forget your dreams. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.